What's going on, Rip City, wherever you may be? This is the Blazers Edge Podcast. You can find us on Stitcher, on iTunes, pretty much everywhere you need for your podcast needs. As always, I'm Dan Morang, contributor to Blazers Edge, and the site guru, managing editor, grand poobah, Dave Deckard. We are back again. Dave, after a short absence and a okay road trip, we're back. What say you?
Grand poobah, I'm having flashbacks. I feel like we should have a prediction that the Blazers will make the playoffs, but that may be a little tougher right now than it was even in the summer of 2015. The Blazers just came off a road trip. They finished it well in Boston, obviously with the win. As I suggested in my recap, it wasn't a convincing win, but it sure was a welcome one. But before that, it seemed to get depressing and super. I mean, not even Dr. Phil could fix what's going on here. What is your impression of what is going on with the Blazers right now as we stand on basically January 24th? 2017.
You know, when Portland left to go on the road trip, I sat in the studio for the Blazers flagship station with Travis Demers and Chad Doing, and they asked me about this road trip, and they said, how do you think they're going to go? I said, probably not going to win a game. And that raised a few eyebrows. They said, not even Philly? I go, well, Philly's got an MVP caliber player who is playing in an otherworldly level, and I think the fact that you can't say that the Blazers are favored on the road against Philly kind of lets you know where the Blazers stood when they left. They had just brutally disappointing losses to start the road trip, to go 0-2, and you're hoping that they can salvage something here and maybe rescue a win in Philly, because that game in Boston sure is not going to happen. Well, it goes down to the wire in Philly in a game that probably shouldn't have, but it did, and through some weird circumstances, you give Mason Plumlee taking the last shot, and they come up a point short. Then you get to Boston, and in a game that you think there's no way, back-to-back in Boston against what we assume is a team that's playing better, and they pull it out. There's that right there, that group of games just kind of sums up the Blazers' season. Not necessarily the record, but what this team has been all about. It was so them. It just didn't make any sense. And it wasn't pretty in the sense that it was a wire-to-wire win, but they were in the game and they pulled out the win. You had brilliant performances from CJ McCollum, Damian Lillard, and Myers Leonard. Just phenomenal. And it got a lot of people talking again. And over the last couple days, I keep hearing that key phrase, have the Blazers turned the corner?
Ah, you didn't read my recap, did you? Oh, God. Yeah, how many times have you asked that this season? Not you, but we, you know. And second of all, what corner? Corner to what? At what point are they going to run off 38 wins in a row?
Is this 500 Street? Have I reached the 500 block?
I mean, you may, at this point, I'm not denying, by the way, that they could turn a corner. I mean, they definitely can play better. I've said, and everyone who's asked me, you know, are the Blazers going to stink all year? What the heck is going on? I've said, look, they're not that far behind last year's pace. They're sinking farther behind it. But, you know, that's still imaginable that they could get to 40-plus wins. They could turn the corner in that sense. But you turn the corner and the street is not looking that much better.
No, I mean, we talked about this before. The eighth seed in the playoffs right now is projected anywhere between 33 and 35 wins. That's, I mean, that's not something that you're sitting there pumping your fist about heading into the season. So, yeah, which way is this Portland team going? They've got a five-game homestand. And if you want to do a comparison between this year and last year, it was this time period and almost this exact spot in the schedule where they started to reel off wins. And in fact, they had that prolonged break that a lot of local beat reporters talked about in the Blazers being able to get after it in practice. And this is where they kind of they forged it, a defensive bond, if you will, on that side of the floor. And that's what kind of ignited their run. Well, they've got 3 days off. They've got a winnable game, which, it's kind of crazy to think, but it's a team in the Lakers that's playing very badly. They just had their worst loss in franchise history to the Dallas Mavericks, another team that's right there in the thick of things in the West, which is crazy to think considering where they were to start the season. So yeah, where's the corner? What corner? Where's it taking you? I mean, this is like the first iteration of MapQuest when it updated like every 5 minutes instead of every 5 seconds when you need it to. I mean, what, did they miss the turn? Are they on the right path? So it's difficult. Yeah.
If the Blazers can't beat the Lakers, that's got to be just as demoralizing. You're right back in the swamp then. They should win this. And see, but this is the issue. Let's say they do win it. Okay, good. You felt good about the win in Boston. You felt good about the win in LA. How many wins does it take to erase, for instance, that road trip? It's going to take at least 3 more in a row just to get you back 500. After the Lakers comes Memphis, and after Memphis comes Golden State. I mean, and then Charlotte, Dallas, Oklahoma City, Dallas, Boston again, Atlanta. A lot of those are home games, but those aren't guaranteed wins. And then you go out for another 4-game road trip. So really, to get the season back on track, I mean, 8 wins in a row wouldn't be a miss. And they're going to have a hard time. I mean, 8 wins right now in a row would get them back to 500. Does anybody think the Blazers can beat the Lakers, the Grizzlies, the Warriors, Charlotte, Dallas, Oklahoma City, Dallas again, and then Boston again? I believe that would get them back to 8. Nope, they have to beat Atlanta too. So is there any possibility they could do that and even get back to 500 right away? Then start fresh in mid-February and make a significant push? That's asking an awful lot.
Yeah, I mean, you're asking for that perfect storm again, heading into the All-Star. That'd
be more than a perfect storm. I mean, flawless, like 52-carat flawless diamond of the rest of the 52. Season. Just to get, well, hey, you know, if you want the girl, you gotta spring for the thing, Dan. You gotta learn this. If you ever want to tie the knot, I mean, you start at 52 and then go down to 48.
You say 52 though, and flashes of Greg Oden's jersey goes through my head, man. I associate these numbers in a way that
and then, you know, I may be making a commentary on marriage too, but it's not that kind of show. So let's leave that alone. So one of the significant things that happened. Well, first of all, let's ask this too. Anything on the road trip besides the lineup change? We've got that, but anything on the road trip that stood out that we haven't seen before? For me, the one thing that I think is hanging out there right now is that the Blazers are having some distinctively better rebounding games where they're fighting harder and they're starting to control the glass for certain stretches, if not the whole game. They're having a hard time putting a whole game together. But I've seen some better effort from the Blazers on the boards and a little better getting back in transition in some cases. And when they do even those two things, they tend to succeed. And that, I think, those were both kind of non-factors or bad factors in the first half of the season here. So maybe there's some hope there for me that if they shore that up, they can start turning this toward the right direction. Have you seen anything different recently that analytically?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head in that those little things like rebounding, the grand scheme of things, as long as you're securing rebounds as a team, it doesn't matter who's getting them. Transition defense, and I think that feeds more into the effort narrative that's kind of been there and waned back and forth. It's not rocket science for anyone to look at this team. It's just that there's been some things that have been amiss, and a lot of them have been effort related, and they translate out on the court as such. In every one of these games, even in the bad games where you saw in against Orlando and you saw against Washington, where there was effort just wasn't there. There were also times when the effort was there and you could see it kind of come together for a few minutes. And that's kind of been the story of the year. In the game against Philly, even though they lost it, you could see there was a little bit of dog in them. And I think that was emblematic of a team that kind of carried that torch through the end of last year. And it appeared again in Boston. And I don't know if it's so much hashtag they as it is a pride factor, and I think a little bit of that is shown through, and that's less analytics and more just kind of eye test. But I had to go back and crunch all the numbers to really take a look at the big picture, but I've kind of stepped away from that a little bit over the last couple of weeks just because I wanted to take a broader picture of what exactly is going on and the little things as you've kind of highlighted them and how they translate to the team. And I mean, obviously the big stuff is the lineup change. I mean, if we would have talked about that, I mean, if we had suggested a lineup change going into this season, the
it's crazy.
The torches especially, and pitchforks would have been out.
especially this lineup change, but let's, before we close that, it's not hashtag they anymore. It's hashtag we. It's hashtag put a body on someone and move your feet. I mean, and the Blazers need to realize that if they do a couple of those little things, their offense is really powerful and they're going to come up with some W's. But if they don't, it all goes to waste. Now let's go to that lineup change that you talked about. It happened in Philly, did not result in a win. Didn't even necessarily result in that good of an output. Evan Turner and Noah Vonleh become, the, in essence, the starting forwards. In Philly, Turner shoots 2 for 10, gets 4 points. Vonleh's 4 for 6, 10 points, which looks a little better, but you still wonder if those 14 points could have been equaled by the regular starting forwards. Or if you got 15, you win the game. In any case, it looked better somewhat in Boston. Certainly Turner did. He had a, I thought, really good game coming back to his old stomping grounds. 12 points and 4 of 9 shooting. Wasn't spectacular, but at least he was decent. Noah Vonleh again had decent stats considering his 17 minutes, but fouled out of the game defensively. What do you think of this lineup change? Do you think it's permanent? Do you think it was effective?
I don't think it's going to end up being permanent unless things go a little bit sideways down the stretch. And even then, I think the lineup would change even further. But I think we'll talk about that a little bit later. With Vonleh, I think you're getting a guy who, he started last year and he had his place basically taken out from under him. But he never really, I don't want to say he didn't earn it, but I don't think he really ever earned it. And now that he's giving that opportunity again, he's bringing energy. He had 6 offensive rebounds on his own in the first quarter against Philadelphia. He brought it. He went after it. He went hard. And I think that kind of attitude kind of feeds to the points that you were making about the extra aggressiveness on the backboards. And I think that's a good thing. And I think that Stotts is coming at that from, I'm going to get a guy who's going to give it for me every single minute that he's out there. And I think Aminu was doing that. I think Harkless was doing that. But I don't think it was infectious. And I think the way that Vonleh was going about it and going after everything was infectious. Now, Evan Turner is a weird one to me in putting him in the starting lineup, because the way you have to stagger the lineup going forward made for some interesting lineups. You saw Leonard and Aminu out there with Damian and CJ at times, which we haven't seen much of this season. So you've got a kind of a weird amalgamation of parts that hadn't always been out there, and at times were spectacular, and at times, like in the Philadelphia game, were really bad. I think in the long run, it'll be more effective for these different units because they have more experience and actual game time together. And for Portland, I think it's a better idea to start doing these kinds of things now because, number one, you don't have the time. Number two, you're still a very, very young team, and building upon this and seeing what you have in certain guys is going to do more for you in the long run than any amount of wins are going to do for you in the short term.
Well, here's what I kind of worry about. I agree with you that I think the effort was better. And it's really funny how that came from a twin perspective, because I think you're right that Vonleh is kind of young and just is playing to the basics. I don't want to say doesn't know better, because he does know better. We've seen him play both ways, really. But he knows that this is something that almost anybody could do, and it's going to get him minutes, so he appeared to be doing it. Hey, I'm young. I saw the floor, and here I go. Watch me. I get to play. And whereas Evan Turner, I think, is standing right now in a spot that a lot of veterans who are new to the team stand in. I think we saw Gerald Henderson stand in it somewhat last year. In terms of, sometimes you'll come in and a malaise is affecting the entire team. And it's just somewhere, it might be in the culture, it might be in their minds, it might be whatever it is. But this team is like in the murk. And you're going, dude, what the heck are we doing? I mean, here, the basketball is about like 6 things. We all know this. I did this with my last team. I don't know what you guys are doing, but I'm going to do basketball. Okay. And I think Turner, the effect is the same, that both of those guys came in and they just did some basic things. Mixed results, granted, but at least it was different. It was back to basic, decent basketball as opposed to Trailblazers basketball as it's been played this year. And I think that's an important reminder. Now, here's the thing, though. Can you keep Harkless and can you keep Aminu on the bench? Now, Harkless, a little bit of an injury and what have you, maybe there's an excuse for that. But as the season goes on, I don't think those guys are going to be content not starting, especially not starting for a not winning team. So, you know, I think at some point you have to make the move back. But what you probably hope is that now Vonleh and Turner have that confidence coming off the bench and bring the same thing, whereas maybe they weren't before because they weren't sure of their place or whether they'd actually play. And then you have Harkless and Aminu seeing them and now ready to go get it when they get back in the starting lineup to keep their spots.
Yeah. With Harkless, I think I worry a little bit. We saw some of this last year where, not that he sulks, but he kind of checks out a little bit when he's not a starter. When he's a starter, he's engaged. He's still a young guy. I mean, he's 23 years old. So toying with him in the lineup is a lot like toying with Noah Vonleh in their position, in that they're still not fragile, but they're susceptible to the emotions that come with it. These aren't 10-year NBA vets that go, okay, I understand. I don't like it, but this is how it's going to be. These are guys that are still playing for their NBA livelihoods. So I think it could present a problem if this team does take a little bit of a downward trend and Harkless isn't seeing the minutes that he was seeing before and instead is seeing a younger player that with that potential tag getting minutes he thinks he may or may not deserve. Same with even with Evan Turner in that position. So I think it's a really, really difficult minefield for Terry Stotts to kind of walk through.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the other side of the coin. If it goes bad, it could go fatally bad because it's not like there's a lot to cling on to right now. So some of these guys, you know, may be able to check out, to just say, this is crap and the season is crap. Now, I don't believe that that's their intent, but at some point when things are not going well and you're not getting the minutes or the due you feel you deserve, a little bit of that is involuntary. Now, I'll put you on the spot. We painted the best case scenario. We painted the worst case scenario. Which one of you, those things do you think is more likely to happen?
Worst case. I mean, I've kind of been on that bus since July. It's just one of those things where I don't think you can catch lightning in a bottle again. And for this team and for the long term, I think it's better that they bottom out. So, and I know it's easy to say that from my perspective, how that translates into the relationships with the players, with the coaches, with the office, the front office personnel, and how that whole, I mean, how do you, if things do go sideways, I as much as I want to be a fly on the wall when that conversation takes place with Neil O'Shea and Damian Lillard, I don't know if I necessarily want to be there for that conversation.
You don't want to be anywhere near the building, anywhere near the locker room, anywhere. They just need to shut the doors, kick all the cameras out, and yeah, that there will be rumbles when that goes down. And the chances of everybody exiting that locker room together and happy, I mean, O'Shea and Lillard is one thing, but like, okay, basically you invested luxury tax money in this team because it was so great together. The chances of them exiting all on the same page at any given point,
same team.
Yeah, let alone the end of the year. Yeah, almost nil. But before we move on now, we're talking about the rest of the season. We would be remiss in not bringing up your boy, Mr. Myers Leonard, playing like a beast against Boston. And already, you know, I've heard people say, because we've had a couple days to think about this win now and his performance, this isn't like other Myers Leonard outbursts. This was different somehow. And, you know, he had 17 points, a couple of nasty dunks, hit 4-4 three-pointers. I mean, the guy, there was very little to complain about given his background and performance. Do you think at least Myers Leonard has a chance of having turned the corner?
I have this big giant smile that I need to wipe off my face a little bit, because I'm sitting here reminiscing at the Boston game and how fantastic it was.
You should reminisce about this summer. If you weren't with us this summer, by the way, you missed a lot of knowledge being dropped on you. A fairly accurate prediction of how things were going to go down. But in any case, when people were complaining about that, Dan spent most of this summer talking about Myers-Leonard and his potential, how this is his year. It did not quite turn out that way, although I mostly agreed that it well could have been. But in Boston, it was. So anyway, go ahead, Dan. I didn't mean to interrupt you. But
no, Myers-Leonard was in full effect. And a lot of the local beat writers, Dane Carbaugh, who's part of Blazers Edge, we're all firm members, and we all, or those of us that are out there, claim to be president of the Myers-Leonard Club. First of all, I would like to tell Dane that it is mine. It is my throne and mine alone. I do not share. I do not abdicate. With that in mind, I was jumping off my couch and thumping my chest right along in lockstep with Myers-Leonard. Myers-Leonard, when he has the right mindset, is more than just a capable NBA big. And by that, I mean not just the dunks and the threes. It's the combination of size, athleticism, and emotion. When he threw that first dunk down, everyone in Boston was oohing and aahing. You could feel it. It felt like the night before when Joel Embiid dunked on the entire Blazers roster. There is something to be said about the mentality of the dunk, and I've said this a million times. And when he has that kind of aggression, it transcends the whole team. It goes everywhere. You can see Lillard getting fired up. You can see McCollum getting fired. Everyone is there with him. They want him to succeed. I think just like fans, and not just because of their own self-awareness and being a part of the team and wanting the team to succeed, they individually want Myers to succeed because of the talent that he possesses. And the way he was playing, that's peak Myers right there. Dunking on everybody, going in for the second dunk, which was glorious, shooting without hesitation and canning it, although we had that 1-3, it spun around 37 times before it rolled in, but it was still buckets. But when you get that kind of contribution from him, not just the box score, but that mentality, the way he only ended up with 4 rebounds, but it felt like he was controlling the paint because of how big and how dynamic he can be and how much space he can eat up. It's a more athletic Robin Lopez with his build. And that kind of space eating and that kind of emotion, all this comes together, it can really lift this team. And what's crazy is the Blazers aren't in that game without Myers-Leonard, because during that point in time, it was still kind of wishy-washy which way the Blazers were going. And then he, the 2 hammers and then consistent 3-point marksmanship kind of steadied them. Now, his plus-minus, I think, was one of the worst of the team, but he, to me, was the key to the victory that night.
If you use plus-minus on a single game, I feel sorry for you. Well, you know, I'm looking up legend here, and there have actually been 2 incarnations of, you say, Myers legend. There's the 1985 legend, which was kind of a Princess Bride ripoff, even though it was actually produced 2 years before Princess Bride. But there's a 1985 legend, which was the movie Princess Bride wanted to be. And then there's some 2015 gangster a gangster version that was, considered a little bit better, I think, by most people. So which Myers legend is it going to be? Is it going to be the terrible fantasy that lets you down? Or is it going to be the tough gangster Myers who brings it to everybody and dominates?
Those of us that are out there that firmly believe in Myers all agree, I think, on one thing: giving him the confidence and the playing time. The thing about Leonard is the inconsistency of minutes that he gets, and that may or may not be of his own doing. And if given the time, now they're going to play the Lakers, who feature Timofey Mozgov. If you're going to have Myers play off of that game, he can't get a DMP or 6-7 minutes. You got to give him 20 minutes. You got to give him the opportunity to back that effort up. If you're just going to use him like a relief pitcher, lefty on lefty, it's just not going to work.
So we're blaming Stotts for Myers-Leonard now? Is that what, are we ready to go there?
I not to a full extent, but I think he does bear some of the criticism in that aspect. And I'm still firmly putting it on Myers, but at the same time, how many games does Noah Vonleh get last year before they finally pull a plug on him? And I know Myers had shoulder surgery, so he wasn't able to be in that. And then I think that kind of figures into this year. Myers started off very, very slow, but every single month of the season, he shot better and better from three. David McKay put a stat up. He started off at 20% in October. He's up to 40% from three in January. I think he's getting healthy. I think he's getting his shoulder right, and I think he's getting his mind right. But we've been at these points before. And it's upon Myers now to make it happen, but he has to be given the opportunity to let that moment come to him.
At IHOP, we've got some waffling going on here. We'll see how it develops. Sounds good.
I hate waffles.
What? How can you hate waffles? No, we don't want to turn this into that other podcast where they just talk about restaurants and food. But tell me, you got to tell me at least, how do you hate waffles?
Okay, I'm not a breakfast food guy.
How is it possible to hate waffles?
My only breakfast foods are eggs, bacon, and hash browns. Those are the only things that I eat for breakfast.
Those are decent, but you gotta have pancakes.
I don't go for the bready stuff. No French toast, no waffles.
That's like hating Brandon Roy. It's just not done.
Brandon Roy is my bacon. Okay, it's Brandon Roy is my bacon.
Dude, waffles are okay, and they have the little things to hold the syrup, so you get like syrup and butter with every bite. Okay, you and I cannot talk anymore. Let's change the subject.
Here's this even. I don't even like syrup.
Oh God, get off my show.
Next week, onto some lighter reading here, or some lighter listening. If you're looking at this team, and you're talking about giving Myers Leonard significant run, Noah Vonleh significant run, are you changing the prism? And I guess we're speaking more for Portland fans in general here, of which you view this team. Is this season functionally over?
Yeah, you better ask me, because I don't take analysis from a guy who doesn't like syrup. Depends. Vonleh, perhaps, and I don't want to insult him at all. He's just more Vonleh, you know, you're going to get a lot more developmental stuff. I think Myers, for all he's been up and down, has more game, has more knowledge, has more functionality. And so I could see putting Myers in the lineup for significant minutes, whether he's a starter or not, and not really waving the white flag and making this a developmental season. I think if you see Vonleh out there a lot, that's an indication that it could be. First of all, I think that he's out there is a little bit desperation. I'm not saying he hasn't earned it. I bet he has earned it, and that's why the avenue was open. But this is a little bit like ducking through a side alley that you know runs to bad territory, but you see what's ahead of you is on the main street is worse, so you're going to try it. I don't see Vonleh getting major minutes without this season being basically done. But then the problem is, who else do you put out there, and how many quote unquote veterans, not that the Blazers have any really, but how many guys with more experience do you bench in order to develop people? And I don't think you can sell that to that locker room, period. I don't think you can sell that to the Stars. I don't think you can sell that to anybody you just paid on 4-year contracts for you. You better hope that you can trade those guys en masse if you do that.
When I look at this team, if you're going to talk about getting these guys minutes, the only two guys that matter outside of the core are Noah Vonleh and Myers Leonard. Those are the only guys that you see significant upside in, and enough youth and enough salary flexibility. But obviously Vonleh on a rookie deal, and Myers is on basically a slightly more expensive MLE, to see what more you can get out of these guys. Because the book is yet to be written on these guys completely. Myers is heading more towards journeyman NBA big than being a starter or first big off the bench. So I think you need to decide which of those three paths he's going to take. And with Noah Vonleh, he's still incredibly young and raw. And if you're talking about somebody that could still grow a bit and be a successful NBA player, and he's the guy, right?
Yeah, but if he's that young, if he's that raw, I mean, your oven's not working. I mean, yes, I get that it takes a while to develop. I get he hasn't had a ton of playing time, although, by the way, he got a bunch last season. He got to start for a long time. If you look in that oven and it's still, like, bloody rare, you need to check temperature on that thing and make sure it's plugged in. And that's a little bit how I feel about Vonleh. It's like I admire his contributions when he goes good. My jaw drops at certain plays he's able to make. But overall, that steak isn't even brown yet on the outside. So, yeah, at some point, I have to say, I wonder if this is just a cut of meat here.
See, this is where you're killing me, man. You're going after me for waffles and pancakes, and you're talking about cooking a steak in an oven.
Prime rib, baby. I know. Well, you should fry it first, but what are the Blazers doing? Cast iron pan, about 2 minutes, 2.5 on each side, stick that thing in the oven. Should be. But the Blazers aren't developing people like that. I mean, you're saying Meyer's kind of soggy noodles here, trying to be a main dish, and Vonleh's rare.
So we need to go less easy bake oven and more, you know, actual household oven.
You got to go Shabazz for the cause, baby. It's like you got to make sure he's not the next Tim Frazier. He'll be the syrup. He'll be the sweet guy in the backcourt. Try that out. Maybe that'll work.
We want to sit here and talk about how
put the steak knife in and twist it. Yeah, Kim Frazier. You want me to talk about Patty Mills too? Want me to talk about Patty Mills too? Oh, jeez. All right, let's move on. You asked if the season was functionally over. Depends on what you mean by over. I don't think the Blazers can go developmental now is what I was trying to say. That's not going to happen. I don't think they can until they're obviously in the last 20 games, maybe the last 10 games, and it's just not happening. And that would require them to be out of a playoff seeding spot, by the way, which I don't think is going to happen. As you say, the bar for that's going to be pretty low. They're going to be in contention till the end, no matter what happens. So I just don't see them going developmental, period, this season. Is it functionally over? Yes, in terms of them being anything meaningful, all right? The dreams that you had that they were going to challenge for an upper echelon playoff seed are obviously gone. The dreams that it would mean anything if they upset their way to the second round like they did last year are gone. The dreams that they're significant in any way in this incarnation are done. So in that sense, the season is over. Do they still have something to play for and something to prove? Yes. Should they still be getting every win possible? Yes, because that is important for all the guys that you're going to keep. And that is important, by the way, because you're spending $112 million and going up for this roster, and you cannot tank a season paying that. That's a disaster. The only thing I can compare that for with is having 4/5 of your starting lineup leave in one off season, and we already did that. You can't pile a disaster, another huge disaster on top of that. So no, to me, the season is not over in terms of trying to earn wins, but it's over in terms of dreaming or anything special. What about you?
It's over. I think that it's easier for me to say that because, as you said, we've talked about how, at least how you and I viewed this coming into the season. So for me, in particular, it wasn't that hard of a pill for me to swallow when they struggled that mightily coming out of the gate. Now, the fact that it hit that hard, particularly on the defensive end, that fast, was a bit surprising. Beyond that, their record isn't that far off from what I expected. So, yeah, it is what it is. And I never thought it was going to amount to that much to begin with. So, is it fundamentally over? Yeah. It's over. But as far as my expectations are, and I think I'm in the minority here, and I know a lot of other guys have written about this, in that what you just kind of said in how the salary cap committed, you can't tank, because ultimately this ends up costing somebody their job in situations like this.
It could cost a bunch of people their jobs. Yeah. And who'd have thought they'd say that at the beginning of this season?
In 6 months? I mean, yeah. That's basically what we're talking about as we get to the All-Star break. And for me, I know it's easy for me to say it, but I'm already in tank mode. I'm already gearing that thing down and driving it out of the garage.
Yeah, it never happened. It never should happen, I think. But yeah, I get it. I get it. I mean, I think we can have a debate, and maybe we will if we got time, about God, I hate to bring this up, and to bring it up in January, no less, whether at this point a pick or a playoff seed is better. Why do we have to ask this again? It's like that shows you the place that the Blazers are. But no, there's tanking is way far away from their vocabulary. I'll tell you what isn't, though, and what should have been. I've said it before. It's a thing that shocks me. The Blazers were just careening down a hill at about 100 miles an hour, clipped all kinds of guardrails last year, made it to the bottom, not only made it to the bottom, but did it fairly successfully, kept the car intact, and had a fairly decent time doing it, surviving by the skin of their teeth. I get that. I get that it was fun. That was legit. To take that car back up to the top of the hill and to do the same thing over again with every guardrail. What do you think is going to happen? You survived by the skin of your teeth. That's the thing that just shocks me. And so I think even though we say in 6 months it's transformed, for me it hasn't really transformed, because this we were calling out every guardrail. I mean, maybe some people accuse us of being like the grandmas in the backseat. Slow down, we're gonna die. But look, that was real. And now here we go again, and now we're over the guardrail, down the cliff. Big surprise. So it's not a 6 month thing. It's just shocking how dramatic it might be. Now we got a mailbag question from Zach here. I want to answer a couple of mailbag questions before we go. And he actually suggests, is it time to trade one of the starting guards before? Let's not go into that again. But the reason Zach's question was significant is he said, look, would you be willing to consider Damian Lillard for Jimmy Butler? And we could talk about the merits of that specifically real quick. But the bigger question here is the bar for a major, major trade now going down? At the beginning of the season, zero people, I think, other than speculatively, would have considered trading Damian Lillard. We had to hold on to a round table that we were talking about because we knew people would explode if we even published it. questioning.
If they only knew how long that thing existed for.
That was like a 9 months that we held on to that. And then they still kind of exploded when we published it. But then, then I think everybody came to a piece with, well, maybe Lillard for Cousins might be possible. Still not likely, still not desirable, but it's okay to talk about. Now we've got our first thing. Well, how about Lillard for someone else? Lillard for a non-center. Lillard for a wing who can actually defend and can score too. My question, is that bar going down for a major trade that it not only might happen, but should happen?
I think on the peripheral of the Damian Lillard ascension to superstardom, there are a few people that have taken a step back. I've heard that some of the narratives of, can we stop calling Damian Lillard clutch? He's only shooting 35% in clutch situations, according to NBA.com.
Sure, but what do you want? But yeah, anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, it's entire teams are set up to stop what is effectively, you talk to anyone in the NBA, we're talking executives, players, who are the most clutch players in the NBA? I mean, you can see it in the All-Star voting returns among the players. Yes, there were some absolutely crazy numbers in there and guys voting for themselves. But when you look at the at the West...
By the way, sorry to interrupt you, but who didn't think about this beforehand? Who did? I mean, coaches can't vote for their own guys. Who did not think that this was going to become a parade of ridiculousness?
Yeah, I think Dion Waiters in there.
I don't understand. I don't know how Harambe didn't get at least 4 All-Star votes, because that it was going to head that way. But anyway, go ahead.
But I mean, sorry. You can see the respect in there, though. I mean, when you see Lillard and McCollum both finishing up there in the very top with Westbrook, Curry, and Harden, I mean, that's your top 5 among the players.
Right.
So, yeah, Lillard's clutch. McCollum is clutch. These guys get it done. And, I mean, we've talked about it before, and the numbers that these guys are putting up. I think that some people, though, are taking a step back, and because of the team's lack of success, some of what Lillard has done and meant to the franchise is being discounted, where In the past, it may have been overvalued. And I think it's closer to somewhere more towards on the overvalued side is where people should be with him because of what he's meant to this team and the things that he's done. And yeah, everybody points to the Houston shot and other big time games and pointing to the wrist. But the evaluation or the self-evaluation process as a fan and what is or isn't acceptable to trade, the only time I think you can say that, no, I'm not going to trade is if you've got LeBron, KD, Kawhi, or one of these superstar talent-laden youngsters like Kat or Porzingis, AD, or Okafor. I mean, the list is 10. I said Okafor. Good God.
Yeah, I know.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, yeah,
we've talked about Okafor like so much. No,
we got an Okafor fetish going on here.
Please, no. No, Embiid. For the love of God, Embiid. Oh.
Okay. Just making sure.
It's been a long day. but, I mean, those are the only guys you do not entertain offers for. Everybody else is fair game. We've seen these guys traded before. It doesn't happen often, but it can happen.
So is the bar going, first of all, is the bar going down though?
Yes, the bar is going down. So let me go ahead and get off my rant there for a second.
Second of all, would you consider Jimmy Butler an equitable trade for Damian Lillard, given the makeup of the team and the situation of the team, not just individual talent?
Yes, and it would make sense for both teams.
All right. I will answer the question for Zach. The day Neil Olshay does that is never.
Yeah.
I don't think Olshay would trade Lillard for, I think he'd think hard about trading Lillard for Embiid. I mean, I think he'd probably go, injury, nope. So I think Olshay and Lillard, and probably Olshay, Lillard, and McCollum are married for as long as Olshay is GM, president of whatever he is.
That's a fair assumption to make.
Yeah, so it won't happen, but it's good. Thanks for your question. We like that because I too believe that people are starting to realize that the major trade might be the only way out of this, and the bar is going down as far as target. Now, can't get beer goggles on, can't get so desperate that you start making crazy moves, but it's out there.
Speaking of moves and mailbags, though, we've got Emil from the Philippines. And while we've discussed Hassan Whiteside and Miles Turner and some of these bigger names and what it would take to acquire those guys, and even you've touched on some of the value guys like Nurkic, but there's other guys out there, Baby Noguera, John Henson, and Emil's wondering, wouldn't guys like that be more cost-effective solutions and realistic trade targets based on their salary, their age, and the fit with their current teams?
Well, I mean, yeah, kind of answered his own question. Would they be more cost effective? Oh, yeah, they'd be more cost effective because they're not as good. They're cheaper, right? So, yes. I talked about Nurkic in yesterday's mailbag, and a lot of fans are hot after him. And of course, ESPN's Mark Stein came out with an article that said Denver is almost certain to move him. I think that's optimistic because he's on a rookie contract. He costs nothing, and it's really hard to get value for that. For the Blazers, like, for instance, look at Alan Crabb. Okay, their scoring is kind of comparable. You can say maybe Denver would like a shooting guard who has good offense, you know, rather than a backup center who's discontented. I get it, but literally, Nurkic makes $2 million. Crabb makes six times that much. I mean, next 3 years, Crabb's going to make 6.25 times as much as Nurkic is. The upshot to that is, yes, Denver's below the salary cap floor right now and can certainly absorb that, but that's money that you can't get back for the duration of Crabb's contract. So you got to look at future investment too, and there's no way those two are equitable. Would you rather have Nurkic at costing nothing or Crabb at what might be a market fair contract, but it's at the upper end of market fair, and it just, in real dollars, it's a lot more. I don't think they can make that deal, and I don't think the Blazers can trade him the kind of pick that they need in order to make that. I think someone else will probably step forward. So I don't think, this is where the Blazers are right now. This is how sad it is. I don't think they can get Nurkic.
Nurkic, to me, is the exact kind of deal the Blazers should be trying to pursue, but without mortgaging any of their big-time assets, whatever you want to however you want to scheme big time assets. What may be big time to a Portland fan probably isn't big time to really any of the executives in the NBA, save Lillard and McCollum. So with that in mind, yeah, if you could move Crabbe straight for Nurkic.
Oh, you do that all day.
You do that all day. Not just because of it fits a need in big man, you know, in roster balance, but Portland is in dire need of salary cap relief, not just necessarily just for cap relief and making things happen, but the flexibility and the need for NBA teams to capitalize on guys on value deals. You need a group of guys on your roster, unless you are a superstar laden team like Cleveland or Golden State, who are outperforming their current salary structure. Heck, even Golden State has those guys. Draymond Green is on a relatively inexpensive contract for what the contributions he's giving. Steph Curry has been on a very cheap contract. So everybody wants to talk about these superstar teams, but the stars kind of align for this stuff to happen. That's how KD was able to finagle his way to Golden State. Portland needs to have that kind of flexibility and have young guys that are on these contracts that allow the Blazers to be more flexible going forward. I mean, if you got this deal, you're basically getting $15 million in cap space back. Now, yeah, it may not work out necessarily that way with the CBA, but that's where the angle that you're coming from.
Right. Well, and the Blazers won't be able to use it, but at least they'll be away from the luxury tax. I mean, look, what are they going to do if they need to re-sign one player? I mean, and they've got one, by the way, still dangling out there. If you want, I mean, you're going to be taxed to the moon. I mean, and it really does. It ends up restricting the trades you can make, too, because you can't take on, even if the CBA allows it, you can't take on more salary and go deeper into tax. You're going to be paying a prohibitive amount. So, yeah, for the Blazers, that would make a lot of sense. I don't see it making sense for the Nuggets. I just think that contract is too valuable right now, and the guy is too serviceable. Even if he's not ideal, they've got to find something that's more production for him than the Blazers can give.
And while Crabbe gives them something that they need, but is it enough for them to get 1.5-2 wins that Crabbe's probably going to give you in the immediate future? To make that move, over the length of his career, how many more wins is Crabbe going to give you versus a player that you may be able to bring in on a max or near max deal that you may or may not be able to facilitate if you do make this move?
Yeah. Now, the story is kind of the same for Bebe, although I think I believe that the issue is less, because I think he's probably a less talented player right now, or at least less productive player. So probably you could sneak in there, although I'm not sure about Toronto's cap situation offhand. And when I look it up, a video blares in my ear all the time. It autoplays, so I'm not going to do it right now. But look, can you do something like that? You have to believe, to keep yourself from going insane, that the Blazers could make a move like Bebe or Henson. The question is, will that be enough, and what are you making that move for? They're young players, yes, but do either of them have real star potential? Maybe Bebe. I don't know. Bebe, whatever. But you have to make a move right now. I think the Blazers are past the line of making a move to try to incrementally get better this season. I think that's done. If they make a move, or when they make a move, they need to do it in order to bolster themselves for the next few years with something that's either guaranteed to provide more wins or at least provides a lot of potential. And I don't see that small move as doing either.
No, the small moves, you're essentially moving the pieces around the chessboard. You're setting yourself up for the future again. And I don't see that as a bad thing from where I sit, in that making yourself more flexible, restocking the cupboard, so to speak, gives you that flexibility. And that's the way that I want to see them go. Reality is not going, I don't think, is going to go down that road.
It's the one way it works, is if they can do multiple deals like that and they get themselves back under the cap by a significant amount. Mm-hmm. Going to be difficult, but they might be able to do it by throwing out on a lot of veterans at teams that can accept salary. But the thing is, if other teams are accepting a lot of salary for your mediocre players, the players you're going to get back are not going to be real significant. That's the price you pay, right? So basically, the other team is thinking, spending a lot of money on a couple of mediocre wing players that aren't really performing that well in Portland, aren't performing well enough for Portland to keep. We'd rather have those two players and spend a lot more money than have this guy on a rookie contract. That tells you a little bit about that guy.
Yeah, I mean, it for the trade to be equitable, there's going to be give and take. And the old saying in the NBA and across other sports, if both teams are unhappy, then the trade worked.
Right. And I think, but both teams might be unhappy for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
In those. I mean, as they say in wrestling, that would be bad heat. And by the way, the Blazers would get bad heat, I think, internally, too, because even if Olshay was building up flexibility again, his
selling
entire
this
relationship.
To Lillard is
yeah,
impossible.
That's it. Starting guards. I mean, what are you doing to us? I mean, we got 3 or 4 years left on our contract, but we expected to win in those 3 or 4 years. We wanted to be doing something, making a mark, not restarting. And by the way, here's the problem with going with young guys too, or even going for draft picks. Let's say Blazer fan dreams came true, and they could unload some of these veterans for draft picks and make a mark in the draft, which Olshay's been pretty good at. How long? How long do you wait? I mean, players reach their prime really in about 5 years. Okay. I know there's production before that. I know players are good before that, but by the time you get it together mentally, emotionally, physically, you are ready to win. That's usually about your fifth season.
28 is considered peak for professional athletes.
I think
your mental aptitude at max coincides with the maximum amount of ability that you're going to get from yourself physically.
Right. And I know stats probably peak before then, but we're talking about the entire make. We're talking about winning now, not just producing. And so 25, right? That's at least the opening of that. How long? I mean, first of all, anyone you draft now isn't going to be 25 by the time Leonard McCollum's contracts expire. Second of all, well, I guess if you drafted college seniors. But second of all, Leonard and McCollum are not going to wait. All right?
You're playing free agency roulette. If you're doing this, you're getting young pieces. You're freeing up salary cap to where you can pair in another ready-made veteran to step in and be that third guy and rely on enough production from a group of young guys. Wow, this sounds vaguely familiar.
Right. Didn't work out real well last time when you went into free agency unguarded. Yeah, so, yeah, and really... Okay, so you turn to Lillard and McCollum and say, hey, we got John Henson. What do you think about that? That move your needle? And they're going to go, I hope this guy can play. And every time that he doesn't, and by the way, I like Henson. I think he'd be a good get. I just don't think that he'd do enough. And I think that it would be a salary move, either him or Bebe or Nurkic, right? I think Nurkic would do a little bit more. But you would be able to see the eyes roll every time these guys weren't ready, every time they couldn't pick up the load that the Blazers really needed them to pick up. And at a certain point, that frustration builds. And at a certain point, you just start to go into business for yourself. You say, okay, we are going nowhere. I'm going to score 30. I'm going to be the all-star, and we're going to buy time, and let me look around and see what my options are when my contract runs out.
Yeah, and that's how you get in a place like the Sacramento Kings.
Oh, Lord. Oh, you do. You invoke Sacramento. I hate syrup. And second, the Blazers and Sacramento Kings are equated. We better stop right there.
Okay, let's go ahead and take a quick flashback here. When I've said that this team, after this free agency period, looked a lot like the Phoenix Suns. And now everybody's like, that's a hot take. Well, I bet you if you pull those articles from 2 years ago and you replace Phoenix Suns with Portland Trailblazers, that narrative from those articles rings pretty darn true.
Oh, you are melting earbuds right now. They're just dripping. People are cursing you like, my earlobes.
I'm used to it.
This is plastic. But you're not incorrect on that. At Sacramento, okay, God forbid the Blazers should ever get there. And I don't think they will because
there's not enough dysfunction here.
Yeah. Lillard and McCollum are not in the same universe with Boogie Cousins as far as dysfunctionality. So, yes, as long as Lillard and McCollum are here, you're going to have a core that is sane, and you're going to have a core that's productive, and that's going to keep your franchise, if not respectable, at least afloat. But yeah, I mean, there is the potential for the Blazers to be managed into oblivion. And I think that they're on the cliff right now, if not sliding over. And if this isn't rectified, the conversations we're going to be having 3 seasons from now are not going to be pretty at all.
I mean, it's safe to say right now that the next 2 months could end up being make or break for Neil O'Shea's tenure, correct?
Oh, you know what? Let us bring that up next time. That's a whole nother topic. Probably one we shouldn't tag on the end, because first of all, it's either 10 minutes or nothing. Second of all, it's going to get us in trouble more. So let's, while people freeze up their earbuds, get them back into shape and get them back in the ear, let's bid you goodbye for now. We'll come back next week and we'll talk about that Olshay thing. Hopefully we'll talk about at least, one more Portland. Let's say two more. They could beat the Lakers and the Grizzlies at home.
We'll get two wins on this one. Hey, let's end on a brighter note and remind everybody we got Blazers Edge Night coming up on March 9th. Dave.
That's exactly it. And by the way, as you've seen on the site this morning, it's do or die time. We really need help with that. We've got tickets left available to donate. It's really easy. Go to blazersedge.com. Look for the site or the post that says right there to donate tickets. Click on it, click through the link. You can buy with your credit card just like you were purchasing from the Blazers. But when you click through our link with our code, those tickets are donated to kids in need. It is simple, it is easy, and we really need your help to do that. We're a little behind this year, so it's time to kind of put up and make sure those kids can go. We hope you will do that because it's a wonderful time.
Couldn't say it better myself.
All right. You want to take us out, Dan?
For Dave Deckard, I'm Dan Morang. This is the Blazers Edge podcast. Wow.
No, he didn't want to take us out.
Oh,
you know,
man,
why
I don't want to take
there
us
is,
out.
There is lack of syrup in your brain, baby. That sugar makes it function. For Dan Morang, I am Dave Deckard. We will see you next week. And that's how it's done, Waffle Boy.
Bacon grease.